Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, guys.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Is it, though?
No, it's not. Things are really, really, things are really messed up. things are in turmoil. Our country is on a curfew, on a not only in a pandemic lockdown, but every major city seems to be under a curfew. Police seem to be instigating the violence among protests across the country. It's really intense, man. My bingo card, I ran out of items for the bingo card weeks ago.
Obviously, if people don't know what we're talking about, then I guess you don't watch the news at all. But people started a man named George Floyd was murdered by cops in Milwaukee a little bit more than a week ago. And
on Monday last week. Yeah.
Yeah. And that started a wave of protests that turned into what seemed from everything I saw to be almost universally in my eyes, there's not a lot of excuse ever for police violence against citizens, whether they're violent, you know, peaceful protesters, whether somebody hucks a water bottle into a crowd of cops or not. I feel like there's not a lot of excuse for, you know, police violence at that point. But we haven't even seen that. Like, we're just seeing the stuff that I've seen almost universally is just unprovoked aggression.
Well, and we have a control against this, which is the white protesters who were armed to the teeth storming state houses a couple of weeks ago and getting defended by the president and largely effectively, you know, coddled by the police. It is a very, very intense time.
There's so many ways we can talk about this, and we can obviously acknowledge that, you know, we're observing this from an outside point of view, right? Like, this is not directly affecting us, but yeah. We can, you know, it's, and today, as we're putting out this podcast, we are hoping that this is a conversation that people are having, right? Like, we know that people don't tune into this show and this channel necessarily for the politics, but it's things that affect all of us. And it's something that we do think is worth talking about. And we know we're not going to cover it all in this next half hour, 45 minutes. But, you know, it's the first chance that the three of us had a chance to share how we feel about it. And hopefully that will give you listeners out there, you know, even if it's not what you agree with, we hope it's something that you can at least think about more of and try to see a different perspective, right? Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to see a point of view that we don't have, which is the view of someone who's Black, who lives in America, and
who lives in a fundamentally different America.
Yeah, and I think that's what this
completely different. Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
I don't know if this is a thing that I've talked about on this podcast before, but years ago I was writing with a coworker who was Black, and we got pulled over by the police, and he started pulling his wallet out of the car and putting it on the dashboard and did put his hands on the sill when the cop, and I was like, "Hey, why did the cop pull you over?" He's like, "I had no idea. We weren't speeding. We didn't run any red lights. We didn't run a stoplight, doing no moving violations." So nothing happened during the stop, thank goodness. But when we got going again, I was like, "Hey, why did you do all that? Why did you do all that stuff where you took your wallet out in advance before the police officer was there? Why did you put your hand out the window when the cop was walking up to the car?" And he's like, "Oh, that's just what I do. It's what my dad told me to do when I was a kid." And like, I got what a lot of Black people I follow on Twitter call the talk from him, which is, when you're a young Black man, your parents tell you, "Hey, here's how you engage with police officers," and it is. You know, the way I was taught to engage with police officers was, if you need help, you go to a police officer. And that is not the experience that a large portion of our population has.
In fact, not only are they not a source of protection, they are a constant threat, as evidenced by the other thing that happened last Monday was the Central Park incident between the birder and the woman walking her dog.
Yeah, Christian Cooper.
You know, Christian Cooper was threatened by Sarah Cooper.
No relation.
Who seemed to have no relation, who seemed to have complete knowledge of what she was doing when she called the police and said an African-American man was threatening her life.
Yeah. That's the story, obviously. That's,
I just want to say, what people keep pointing out is that that's not, there's nothing new about what happened between Sarah Cooper and Christian Cooper. There's right. nothing unique about it. It's just that it was recorded. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. And I think something, the people now diving deeper in that story, it's come to light that she on paper is a progressive liberal, right? And has, right. Made donations, all sorts of progressive causes, and it didn't stop her from doing this because it's deeper than on paper what people say they are. It's a systemic problem, and it's something that we all have to reckon with.
Well, and I mean, I think the constructive thing for us to do isn't to talk about how we fix police or how we fix, this isn't our realm necessarily. Maybe you more than us, Adam.
Although getting rid of qualified immunity would be great, but go ahead.
Right. Getting rid of qualified immunity, demilitarizing the police, all good choices, right? Maybe not Absolutely. Using tear gas and pepper spray during a pandemic that's spread by coughing. I don't know.
Maybe you're right, Will.
Maybe if you need to do crowd control, don't roll out with a bunch of fucking riot armor and tanks. That's, de-escalate rather than, anyway. One thing we can talk about is how to be a better ally to people and how we can help, how we can help educate other people that are like us. And the hardest part of all of it is changing your initial thoughts, right? For years and years and years, when I would see somebody pulled over on the side of the road, I would think, oh, traffic stop, white people. Oh, that guy's probably, doing something illegal. There's six cops and a black guy on the side of the road, right? And admitting that you were wrong about that stuff, or that you're potentially wrong about that stuff, and having the courage to sit down and take out your phone and start recording a video when you see, a black man stopped by cops is probably the first thing to do. I mean, reading is probably the first thing to do, but learning to know that you were wrong is hard. Like it's hard to challenge your preconceived notions. It's hard to break years and years of training by everything from your elementary school teachers on up.
It is literally looking at the world through a different lens, a lens that makes it clear that when you have laws written, when you have a structure built by racists, that structure is going to have racist outcomes, right? The casual, banal, institutional racism that is so baked into our system is traditionally hard for white people to see, and yet it is there for everyone else to witness.
And hard to see because, frankly, we all benefit from it. And right. passively, indirectly, the system has worked for people who are not black.
Damn.
I know.
I don't know about you guys, but we're all a little bit freaking out in my house. I mean, everyone is maintaining, but the last few days have brought this elevated, and the whole city feels like this. It feels like this feels like an inflection point. And, inflection points are double-edged because things could get much worse, or this could be the path by which we actually are really able to reconcile our wrongs and confront deeply, deeply embedded racist history of the United States.
It's like any inflection points are singularities, right? You go into them, you don't know what's going to come out the other side. And I would feel a lot better if we had more competent,
any leadership,
empathetic leadership. Although, one thing that Gina and I have been taking comfort in is the leadership, the state and local leadership. I feel like here, at least in California, Gavin Absolutely. Newsom doing a great job for the most part.
Yep.
London Breed has, I feel like she's at least doing what she feels is right. It highlights the importance of state and local elections for these kinds of, for all issues, but especially for things that are of pressing local concern, right? Like, I don't want a governor who's going to say, why don't you roll in with the 101st Airborne to my cities?
Well, again, I mean, also forward-thinking local governments, we now have a direct control witnessing how different local governments handled the coronavirus lockdowns and which decisions had an actual body count to them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy that it's all happening during a pandemic, but also, you know, it brings light that the people going out to protest are literally putting themselves not just in the harm's way of the protest, but the harm's way of the pandemic. And now a shared, you know, it's something that people previously didn't have to think about, but that just shows the gravity of it all, right? That it's you know, it's worth putting our lives at risk, even peacefully protesting, because it is something that has reached this point. And it's, you know, it's nothing new, right? We've seen, you know, we saw it with Trayvon Martin, we saw it with, but now the hope is that, you know, once, you know, obviously we're escalating right now, we don't know where that's going to end, but the conversation doesn't stop. And for us who live so much on social media, I've been reckoning over the weekend, you know, it's obviously seeing a lot of people that we follow in our own kind of, you know, circles and echo chambers talk about this, and the feeling of like, you know, if you stay, you go through the whole thing, right? Like, okay, it's not my time to talk, but talking about it does help. Because I'm always surprised by how many people are not in the circle, and how many people who fundamentally believe this doesn't matter. It's shocking, right? Like, posting Black Lives Matter and the number of people who respond with All Lives Matter always blows my mind. Like,
it's just absolutely astounding. And look, if you happen to be a very small percentage who's listening to this, who disagrees with us and or me politically, and listens to Tessa, despite that, I assume it's a very small amount of the listeners. But when you say Black Lives Matter, it literally means all lives matter. If you can't understand that, you're totally not paying attention.
I mean, some people are trolling. They're doing
absolutely
troll,
totally
right. But
you know, so go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm trying to understand, if they're not trolling, what is it about this movement that they are offended by, right? Like, can someone, do they just not reasonably understand the point of this? Or, like, what is that perspective?
I don't know. I mean, I fundamentally don't understand how you can watch a video, any of the videos of a police officer, you know, murdering a Black person and think, oh yeah, this is, you know, my life is, this is about me, right? This should be about me, a white guy
right.
Wherever. And, it just absolutely, it shows a profound inability to listen to other human beings and pay attention to what they're saying. Like people, here's the thing to remember is that people don't go out and risk their lives and do this stuff. And just to be clear, if you have, like, Rebecca Watson, I think, said this on Twitter the other day, and it was very smart. And it was like, hey, you know, people, if you're complaining about kids getting hurt at these protests by cops throwing tear gas and pepper spray at them, then why the fuck did you bring your kids? Sorry, I apologize for my language, but I'm pretty pissed off. Why the fuck did you bring your kids to this protest where you knew there'd be cops? And the idea that like a protest that there are going to be cops at is a dangerous place that you shouldn't bring your kids is exactly why we have to, why people have to fucking protest. Like, that's exactly it.
Right.
That, like, yep. Like, if you can't see that that's a problem, and you can't see that cops using violence against peaceful citizens is a problem, then, you know, that's, I don't know that there's any helping you.
And journalists and the, right. And yeah. People there.
There seemed to be a very systemic, excuse me, across the country, the police were regularly ignoring press, asserting that they were press, and arresting them, manhandling them, kettling them, the whole business.
I don't.
That's really chilling.
I mean, it's almost like, having the president of the United States call the press the enemy for the last 3.5 years has had a long-term effect and has had an impact on, you know, how people around the country see journalists.
Well, and it's particularly pernicious at this exact time when the business model of the Fourth Estate is under such attack by tech and by people's desire to have everything for free. Right, it, like, that's one thing that's happening. And then the other is you have this direct attack where the president was encouraging protesters who were threatening and attacking journalists.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have.
We all know people who work in law enforcement. I mean, Adam, I know you work with, you know, CPE.
I've worked with many wonderful, wonderful policemen and policewomen over the years, and count several as great and close friends. Absolutely.
Yeah, and
this isn't about the monolith that is cops. It is really about state sanctioned violence. It's about the militarization. I mean, and it's sorry. Go ahead, Norm. Finish your point.
Well, and I know there's a lot of people saying, you know, this is it. The example shown, right, is the few bad apples, and you know the whole phrase is the few rotten apples spoil the barrel, right? And that's why it's unacceptable. Is that it's a system where, right, there are people where it's a culture of where it's too easy to get a badge, right? Or the path to get one doesn't always mean that, you know, they understand their own neighborhoods or necessarily the places that they're meant to serve and protect.
You don't select the most qualified people to be cops always, right?
And, you know, I think specifically in New York, there's been a whole history of a problem where the people who are cops aren't from that neighborhood. Right. Even though it's supposed to be that way, because if you're not working, you know, you don't live in the neighborhoods that you're protecting, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Right. Then that's part of the systemic problems that lead to this type of, you know, the oppression. I can't imagine the minds of people of the cops right now who are going out here, because this is we started this talking about the differences between the protests for, you know, the pandemic, right, at the state houses a couple weeks ago, and the police reaction to that being completely different. And I don't think it's race, absolutely a big part of it, but also fundamentally this is a protest that's directly attacking at those law enforcement systems, and so they feel personally attacked, and that's going to lead them to, you know, in those moments feel like they have to exercise their power, which is an awesome power, even more so.
Yeah.
And not contend with the responsibility that comes with that.
We are in our house also upping our activism. We're doing some calling and some outreach projects with different organizations. Also, people can donate to bail bond relief organizations in these different cities. That's a huge thing you can do. There's tons of people being arrested, being held on bail that they can't afford, even if it's a few hundred bucks. Anything you give to that will really help, and making sure that everyone can vote.
And if you don't have cash, then share, tell your friends, talk to people, read. You know, one of the things, you know, don't call your black friends and ask them what to do. Don't be like, hey, can you explain racism to me? That is not that's not going to help anybody. It's not what you need. But there are bazillions of good books. I'm happy to post some on Twitter. We've talked about, I think, Between the World and Me here by Ta-Nehisi Coates 2-3 years ago now, probably. How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibrahim X. I can't remember his last name, in True, which is very on brand for me, but is what I'm reading. Like, I went through and picked up all the books that have been on my shelf for Ibrahim X. Kendi is fantastic. But yeah, go through and read a lot. Read until you start to understand.
Yeah. I mean, there's listening, there's engaging in your own circles, right? Even if you can't go out and physically participate. Obviously, so there's donating. We'll include links. There are some great charities where it makes it super easy. If you're listening on your phone, you can click one button with Apple Pay, and you know your donation gets split evenly between 30 and of multiple different bailout funds. And there's also, like, again, our audience are tech savvy and we live on social media, but there's also being very cognizant of like the misinformation that's being spread around and not getting caught up in, you know, frankly, the gotcha culture of it all, because, you know, even if people are sharing things with good intentions, it's on all of us to read and understand that and not just gut and, you know, retweet.
Don't put a black triangle on your Instagram today in the Black Lives Matter hashtag.
Yeah.
Because it clogs up the information feed for people who actually use the hashtag for you know, protest purposes.
Make art. As you say, Norm, it is on all of us because a lot of the social media platforms have abdicated any responsibility.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Twitter for like taking the very first baby steps in in quashing yes. violent speech from Republican politicians, though. Finally.
Excuse me. Yeah. No, hey, we'll take progress where we can find it. Absolutely.
But I mean, for real, make art. Go out and like make art and sell it. Gail Simone posted an auction yesterday of if you don't have cash to send, make art and sell it and give the money to the charities responsible. Like there's lots of ways to contribute even if you don't have cash and can't go protest.
Yeah. I mean, we're in just like the fourth day of this, and it really does feel bigger than, you know, the past instances of Black Lives Matter, you know, the protests, part of it because of the response by the government, but also part of it because just of, you know, the rising escalation of it all. I do hope people are safe in going out, and not everyone is fortunate enough to be in, you know, like California or the Bay Area, where there have been many peaceful protests. And let's be clear, like this is also in the reporting, the vast majority of the protests have been peaceful. We've only been seeing the stuff on the news where, you know, and
the news, their job is to sensationalize. Absolutely. Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the news is doing a spectacularly uneven job of attributing, you know, somebody pointed out that when there's police violence, newspapers almost always use passive voice. And when there's protesters throwing bricks, it's almost always active voice. So, you know, it's protesters throw bricks at police. Tear gas was used against protesters, right?
Look at the Times headline this morning.
Yeah.
Those idiots. As chaos reigns, Trump vows to make it stop. I mean,
gassed a peaceful protest to clear a path so he could show what a big, strong man he was.
For a photo opportunity. Yeah. Do you know about the fact that Fox News scheduled an interview with the rector of that church for 7 p.m. for the exact time of the photo op so that he'd be off-site and occupied?
Wow.
I came across that on my Twitter feed. I did not double-check it, but, you know.
That seems right. That reads.
So, that is, yeah, it does scan. However, I want to say, I say that without attribution, and I did not go look for a source that fit my worldview. So I could be totally wrong, and it could be a bald-faced lie.
Well, it's, I mean, good, but it's worth going out and looking at reporters and journalists who are sharing videos of things that have
happened. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's
their direct experience is out there to see. Yeah.
If you watch, and I know that there are going to be some people in the comments saying fake news, fake news, fake news. But when one person is telling you that everything everybody else says is a lie and everybody else says, hey, this is the truth. And we're talking about people who've been journalists and reporters at publications for 20 years. You have to start, you know, count the people saying things on either side.
I think you just went to the point of all is that it's so difficult in a human nature for us to change our worldview, right? To even to acknowledge it isn't to actually change it, right? Even what we're doing right now by talking about it doesn't mean that we're actually the action will will stand for itself in the days and weeks and years to come. And hopefully we can live up to that as well. But hopefully this is our, you know, first step in this moment to talk about it. But that's at the heart of it all, is that when you're telling someone that Black Lives Matter, you know, you're also asking someone who maybe doesn't subscribe to that to change their whole worldview and the things that they accept. And it can be, it's scary, right? It's like people shrink into these, you know, into these insecure states, which we all do, because we don't want our lives to change, because we haven't had to go through those things. And like, the optimistic thing is that, like, no one's asking one person like you out there, listener, who, you know, who isn't Black, no one's gonna like take away your livelihood. And if we all come together and acknowledge and share the burden of the fact of this injustice that's been going on for hundreds of years, right, it's not that difficult as a whole for us as a society to change, right? And yet people take it very personally.
Well, it's hard to hear you have you're privileged when you're fighting your ass off to get ahead and to get something for your family, and you know, the it doesn't seem like much of a privilege, but the privilege to not risk being killed when you roll through a stop sign is a pretty big privilege, you know, in my book.
Well, and people keep thinking that privilege means that they have a leg up. Right. So, like Scalzi's wonderful analogy that white privilege doesn't mean that you get to win automatically. It just means that you get to play this game on the easy setting. But what that also means is that people of color are playing a vastly more difficult game than you are playing. The settings on their game would look completely alien to you because you don't live in the same space that they do.
And the easy literally setting doesn't always feel easy.
Yeah.
Right.
For most not
people,
at all.
It doesn't. People are struggling. Absolutely. Especially in the time of pandemic.
Everybody suffers. That's the first noble truth. Everybody suffers. Obviously. Everybody does. Nobody escapes from that. And that suffering is real.
Yeah.
And some people suffer more. Somebody pointed out on Twitter the other night that America has been so racist for so long that when you attack racism, a lot of people feel like you're attacking America.
Yeah.
I was like,
Explains,
you know,
the big
that's
Karen.
Another way of saying when you're in the dominant power structure, equality feels like oppression, right? These are both the same thing.
Yeah. Next steps?
Yeah.
There's
so many things.
Donate.
Yes.
Donate, educate yourself, vote, talk to your friends. And like really white people, it's incumbent on you to talk to your other white friends about this. Don't go conscripting your Black friends to tell you how to fix this situation.
Yeah.
That's not their job to teach you how to do that.
And if you think we're wrong, right, and I'm sure there are some listeners out there who don't agree, and if you don't agree and you've listened your way through the entire podcast, thank you, right? Like, at least you just didn't turn it off, you know, then you're the person that we want to have a conversation with, right? You're not just the troll. I'm not going to listen, but we do want to have a conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, Look, I try to assume that all of us, even when we vastly disagree, that for the most part, we are all trying to do the same thing, protect our families and our friends and our loved ones and our communities and afford the best life for each of those groups. That is certainly what informs my politics, which is why I value inclusivity and equanimity. I think of a town with 100 people in it and how they take care of each other. And that is the value that I ascribe to even a place as big as the United States. The only way we're going to get through this is by listening to each other, right? Like, to really understand what another person's experience is instead of just deny, and the status quo.
Listen and believe.
And, you know, as tested, you know, if you are here to learn about, you know, different makers and maker culture and people doing wonderful things in this space, you know, share those things from people who are not represented, right? From Black makers and from Black engineers and scientists. And, you know, we're going to try to do our part to amplify those voices too, but there are so many that we probably don't know of through our own blindness. And please share those with us so we can, you know, learn about them and engage them.
On that absolutely. Note, Khalif Jenkins of the Spawn On Me podcast is a friend, and he put together a great roundtable of people to talk about George Floyd and the protests and what it's like to be Black in America. And it was a really, really fantastic podcast that I learned a lot. So I highly recommend it.
Thank you, Will. We'll include some links here in the comments below. There's not much to talk about for Tested this week. I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are pissed off that we spent this podcast talking about politics, that's what's happening now. It's not about politics, it's about human beings, and people are being hurt out there, and whatever you think about the situation, that needs to stop, and we need to start healing from this, and we considered it vital to talk about this today.
I don't think there's anything else we could have talked about today.
No.
Yeah.
And if it makes you uncomfortable, maybe look deeper.
I mean, I think we can all be honest and says it makes all of us
uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. We are all uncomfortable.
Completely.
Right. Like, absolutely. You've heard the silences here. This is something that we don't talk about on a regular basis. Certainly not enough.
Yep.
And especially in this time where we're isolating, like we're talking about it in this household. I know you guys are talking about it in your own households. And you know, we're going to use this as a forum to talk about it even amongst ourselves. And so thank you for listening too.
I would love it if people had resources for talking to your kids. My 7-year-old has questions that I'm not really equipped to answer and would love advice from the audience on that. Or at least places to start. And I'm going to go out and do more of my research. Thank you guys.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, everybody. Stay safe.
Yeah. Oh, hey. If you're going to go out and protest, buy a pair of goggles at the hardware store. Take your safety goggles at the hardware store, please. They're shooting rubber bullets, and a lot of people are losing eyes. So, you know,
Yep.
wear your safety gear. Anyway.
Yeah, be a helper.
Yeah.